out of material. I mean, for those of you that are into learning and not part of the maddening crowd out there. Now, as we said, we're starting a 10-year course in response to literature, the heartbeat of the halakha. And as I said last week, I gave an introduction which some of you may have understood me only verbally, some of you may have really understood me. I gave an introduction on Chachmat Yisrael or Wissenschaft des Judentum vis-a-vis what I call Talmud Torah. And there's no question that what I try to do in this class, I think, is the way I believe, and again, I have to say the way I believe, I can be totally wrong, but the way I believe we who are B'nai Torah and Yeshiva people can try to find a synthesis between the good in Chachmat Yisrael and enhance our Torah study. And I said in this introductory lecture, which I started last week and I'll continue today, I said we will try to understand, and I owe a lot in this lecture. As I mentioned a few names of people who taught me, gave me a path, a derech, because I didn't get any of this out of Yeshiva University. I didn't get any of this out of Lakewood. I didn't get any of this out of what I learned formally, but I got this from people who I only met in passing, or one person I never even knew. He was murdered long before I came to Israel. And as I said, Rav Shlomo Yosef Zevin, where do we find sources? We're talking about halacha, how do we handle it, where do we find the sources? And I spoke about the Mefarshim, and I explained to you there's May Prapal HaKlal, Kol HaPrat, Mechadshim, Mefarpalim. We went into a bit of an analysis, and it's absolutely true that throughout the millennium there have been these three different approaches to the Mefarshim. And there's no question when you do a Sugya Rashi and Tosfot and the Ramban and the Reshba, you have a world of sources, despite how different they are. Shlomo, turn the lights on and back. Despite how different they are, you have a world of sources towards halacha. Number one. Number two, we went into Psak, the Sifrei Psak. And again, I'm only handling now on an introductory level. I'm going to spend a lot of time on Sifrei Psak, and I actually owe Jack an answer to a wonderful question he asked a year ago, and I told him I'll do it when I get to it. I don't like to do things on a popular level, and we'll go into it in great detail. With the lights, anyone know how to get them on? The middle section here is off. Is there a thing up front? I don't know. Just leave everything on. Okay. And good, thank you. And I explained how Psak developed when it did. We went into the Gonic period, the Karayim, the tremendous Gola, and we discussed all these forerunners that thought about Sifrei Psak, and then we went into the differences in Sifrei Psak, Hilchata de Meshichata, Halacha Hanoi Bizman Hazer, its own integral order, or following the Seder of the Shas, without Makarot, with Makarot, and we gave you many examples. And then I spent a good part of the end of this year dealing with the Shulchan Aruch. And I related to you what I had heard from the Rav in 1950 and what I spoke with the Rav in great detail in 1978. And there's no question vis-a-vis the Shulchan Aruch, and I hope you checked it out. Again, I don't want to burden you with checking material because I know the pressures you're under in the classes that you have to take Bechinat on, and that's why I try to spoon feed you and depend upon my ability to teach and the fact that you have background, and a lot of this should not be strange to you. Jacob, there's the tape. Michael has it. And I explained to you, do you remember the words of the Rambam? Hiskimu Aleihim Kol Yisrael. And I said in relation to the Shulchan Aruch, and I'll come back to this in a lot more detail later this year, and there's no question that it's not that you can't paskin against the Shulchan Aruch, but as Rebbe said to me when I forced him against the wall in 1978, you better know full well why you are paskining against the Shulchan Aruch. Now, I said that this crystallization is ongoing, and Barry, I mentioned that there can very well be another Sefer. I don't want to say that the Shulchan Aruch ended all of the writing in Torah Shebaal Peh. I'm not so foolish. The Rambam either wrote it foolishly or tongue-in-cheek, and we're dealing with the Rambam. And With all that, the Rambam is the Rambam. When it comes to the Rambam, we shudder, we shake. And even he thought he could end it all, and you all know how many commentaries have been written on the Mishnah Torah. But what's interesting about the Shulchan Aruch is that inevitably every Sefer written since has to come back to the Shulchan Aruch, deal with the Shulchan Aruch, and somehow until today the Shulchan Aruch has conquered the world of Psak, and we begin and we try to end with the Shulchan Aruch. When we say already end with the Shulchan Aruch, it means the Shach and Taz, the Primogodim, and the Chalkat Machokek, and the Beit Shmuel, and all the commentaries, the Sma, the Sefer Mirat Einayim, and all the commentaries that we have in the Shulchan Aruch until today, that it all goes back to the Shulchan Aruch, and even the Aruch HaShulchan, and the Mishnah Brura, and the Rav Shulchan Aruch, everyone goes back to the Shulchan Aruch. Now, I want to go one step beyond what I said last week. And we say, Hiskim Aleim Kol Yisrael. I was waiting for someone to... Is everyone signed in? Everyone is on this list now for this class? Okay, I'll call the list in a few minutes. I just want to get into the lecture. I was waiting for someone to ask me the question. No one asked it. And it was just as well, because we didn't have time last week. Tell me, how do we know when we achieve crystallization, achieve consensus? And the truth of the matter was, there was a long machloket around the Shulchan Aruch. One of the boys, I forget who asked me the question. Someone asked me that. David, you asked the question that there was a long machloket around the Shulchan Aruch until it was accepted. And remember, I gave you afterwards the source. You can hear all about it, learn all about it. And that was your question, Shlomo? Okay, so beside. It's okay. It was a good question. How do we know when it's accepted? And here I have to come to a very delicate point. And it's something that goes way beyond Shulchan Aruch and way beyond this class. We live in a world, I don't know of, there are not many Jews who live in a world which is not hyphenated. Perhaps in America there's nobody. There's absolutely nobody from Satma down. Nobody lives in a hyphenated world. I always give the example in America, it's always shocking to me, to see a Satma traveling in from Borough Park to work in the Diamond District, and he's reading the Daily Znut while he's on the BMT subway. When he runs out of the Diamond District, he buys the New York Post, and in the state of Israel, Yerushalayim, you'll find a Meir Sharim Jew reading Marav, reading Yediyot Ahronot. The guy would rather be caught dead than be caught with a Trefa newspaper. But in America, you either assimilate on the level of the New York Times, like a good YU boy, or you assimilate on the level of the Daily News or the Daily Znut, like a nice Satma Chassid. But everyone in America, everyone in Canada, when I say America, I mean Canada as well. I've now been to Canada, and I found that Canada is a lot more like America than it is like England, and there's very little difference between the Japs and the Caps. Basically, they're the same. In Israel, there's a little group that still doesn't live in two worlds. But almost everyone lives in two worlds. And this is the source of our tension, the source of our insecurity. This is why we struggle so much with Hashkafa. And this is why Aaron Rakefik can make a living, because I can go all over the world giving lectures on dual culture, on hyphenation, and on this approach, on that approach, and everyone and his mother wants to hear what the idiot Rakefik has to say, because we all suffer with these problems. And since I've suffered longer than most, I've been alive so many years and lived with Gedolei Yisrael and Lakewood and YU, so people think I have something to say. Now, one of the greatest problems we have living in dual culture is that we were raised in democracy. And we're taught democracy. Nathan, the former animal, hears democracy. He gets all excited, waves a banner, democracy, the state of Israel, democracy. Democracy and Judaism have absolutely nothing in common. If anyone ever told you that we believe in democracy, they were giving you such a lie, such a line, such a put-down, such a haratzot. And it's very obvious. Why don't we believe in democracy? Because the minute we said HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Naseh V'Nishma, at that moment, democracy ended. Democracy means we put everything to a vote, and everyone has one vote, and one man, and one vote, and a tzaddik, and a rasha, and a pimp, and a prostitute. Everyone lines up and has one vote. A guy who learned day and night, a guy who doesn't hold the sefer. Yesterday I made Havdalah in the King David Hotel, so we had some family there. My children walked over, and I met them right after Shabbos, brought all the Havdalah, and these women say to me, "What are you doing?" I say, "I'm making Havdalah to end the Shabbos." And one woman is in her late 80s, the other woman is in her early 80s. They turn to one another, did Pop make Havdalah? Nah, we never, don't read. Their father was a tzaddik, but they don't remember. It's 80 years ago. But then, but by then it was an ethical culture. I think she joined ethical culture at the age of 14. So that's democracy. Everyone is going to vote. So I want to tell you one thing, as harsh as it sounds, we do not believe in democracy. There are open sugyas in Baba Batra. Isn't when there's an oven governing the city, you can't make any takana without his approval. Am I right or wrong, Michael? Right there, you go against democracy. Remember the Gemara with the Sheikhtim? They're going to Shecht. One day it's my turn, one day your turn. And the Gemara says, if they didn't consult with the rabbinic authority, Lav Kol Kamina, their whole takana is worthless. So, what's our problem here? When we start talking about crystallization and Hiskim Aleim Kol Yisrael as Americans, Canadians, as Israelis, lo aleinu, it's a tragedy to be an American, a Canadian, or an Israeli. Because right away, from childhood on, democracy, put it to a vote, I am totally and absolutely, completely against democracy. It has nothing to do with Torah whatsoever. Democracy means lesbians, homosexuals, march. Democracy means give back Jerusalem. You're seeing a lesson in democracy before your eyes. And you can write down what I'm telling you, that Jerusalem has already been returned. I have seen the plan. 5 years from now, the Arabs behave themselves. You should see what they're going to get. And some of my own children will be living in what will be considered the Chutz Laretz. They'll be in part of the autonomy, not in Jerusalem anymore. This is democracy, you understand? Rabin, elected, the will of the people, the majority. Stock market is going crazy. Everyone should, Rakefet should be happy. I have all my money. When I left BMT and they couldn't give me a pension because I was getting a pension for all the years I sweated and struggled in this slave camp over the mountain. So I put it into Kupat Gemel. Rakefet should be happy. It's in Kupat Gemel. Kupat Gemel is a face 70% in the stock market is breaking all records here. People are going crazy with joy. You like the plan? The average person? I love it. Give back the coal belt. They don't go with Yavis Salavachik's reason, people. They go with one reason. Give back the coal belt. The stocks will go up another 20%. Give it back. Give back your mother. Give her back. Cut up your mother into 20 pieces. Divide it to Arafat. Give it back. This is democracy. This is a tragedy. Now, I want to make one thing clear to you. The words of the Rambam, Hiskim Aleim Kol Yisrael, does not mean democracy. You're going to ask me, how do we know? There is no definitive definition. How do we know? How do we know when the Talmudic period ended? Did anyone vote in it? No. It's the healthy, intuitive sense of the Gedolei Yisrael, of the Talmidei Chachamim, of the people who learned Torah. Let me say it to you best, the way I heard it from my Rebbe, whom I have to say again, many of you came here to escape. And it breaks my heart because I know how much I got from Redbeard or Rav Yosef Weiss. And it hurts me. Someone said to me yesterday, oh, my brother came to study in the Kol in 77. I said, why did he come then? It was a small call. He wanted to escape Rabbi Weiss. That was 77 already. So I remember Rav Weiss said to me, we were learning a Mashar. So what does the Mashar say? Makshin ha'aylam. Isn't this, am I right, Evan? Time and again the Mashar will say, Makshin Olam, the Maram Milublim, Makshin Olam. The world is asking. You're going to worry what the world is asking? Go out to Dizengoff, do a survey. Go out to Ben Yehuda. The world is asking. The world is asking how Michael Jackson is, how Madonna, what's the last thing that exhibitionist has done, how many times she's masturbated in public. That's what the world is at. The world is asking. Makshin Olam. Makshin Olam. This is the world that counts. It's the healthy intuit. And this is the world that lasts. You can take all the isms and all this is popular and that is popular and your generation and my generation and this Yetzer Hara and this Avodah Zarah, the only thing that survives is Tavah Hashem. And unfortunately, it only survives among the chosen few who choose properly. And this is the healthy intuitive sense. No one can put it to a vote. Somehow you know a period has ended. You know that the Shulchan Aruch is accepted. It took 100 years. By the end of 100 years, Shlomo, the opposition was over. You follow me? What the Mashal wrote, what the Mashal wrote, they attacked it bitterly. But somehow at the end of 100 years, do you know what? Give me one more minute. Now, this concept of crystallization is ongoing. Give you an example. Something that I have seen in my lifetime. And I think with this example you'll understand me. When I was growing up, one of our biggest problems in the Bronx, and again, many of you can't conceive, we came from poor families. Literally, we were Zaycha Lekayem, Hizaharu Bivnei Amniyim, Shemehem Teitzei Torah. I know Abba Branspiegel and Moshe Yaged, we were kids together. We all came from poor families. Others as well, I don't want to mention Heshi Shecht, all the names, the Gedolei Yisrael today. We all grew up together. We grew up in the Bronx, low middle class families. We had a terrible problem on sukkahs. Who could build a sukkah? You lived in big apartment buildings, Adla Shemayim. So either you ate in the shul, or about 5 blocks from me was a shtickle, a Hasidic Rebbe, who had a little shtickel. So when he would finish eating, I would eat there. We would come, a few of us would come together. Kama Hashem zachati lachesed nurayach lech techacherai b'mid b'be'eretz lo zavruah. Believe me, Barry can't even comprehend what I'm talking about, thinking of Munsi and Sukkot and everything. But it was difficult. Maybe it was good that it was difficult. We appreciated it. So I would come into the sukkah, and right as we would come in, the Rebbe himself would be turning on more lights. He was Machnas Orech, I have to say, and he said, I don't need so much light. You fellas need more light. You're going to sing louder. You're younger. You know, who sang in the Bronx? They were frightened, but we sang. We were younger. We had the guts. The Rebbe himself was turning on lights on Sukkot. And the truth of the matter is that when I was growing up, many people turned on lights on Yom Tov. And you all know that it's a serious question. Why? Because we take Esh Mayesh. And everyone said, you turn on electricity, you're taking Esh Mayesh. And there were many materials, I'm not going to go into great detail now, but many of the, almost every Sephardic Pesach was Mekir. Many of the Hasidic Poskim were Mekir. Then years moved on, and rabbis became a lot more knowledgeable of science. And people started to study science, physics. And they learned, hey, wait a minute. Turning on electricity is not like taking fire from fire. You are completing a circuit, and it may very well be that there is a Yisod D'Oraita of Boner, or, no, what's the other one? Makkah B'Patish. Understand what I'm saying, Donnie? An Yisod D'Oraita, Boner, or may very well be Makkah B'Patish. Well, this issue hung fire for many decades. I want to tell you today, in the year 1994, there was not one posek in the world who will be matir turning on lights on Yom Tov. Whether he's Hasidic, whether he's a Litvisher, whether he's of German origins, whether he is Sephardic. And even Rav Avadya Yosef, who certainly is not among the machmirim of our generation, and in addition he's Sephardic, Rabbi Ovadia Yosef Paskins today, you cannot turn on lights on Yom Tov. If your parents do it, don't rebuke them, because they were raised being taught you're allowed to turn on. And you know, when a child rebukes parents, the parents get very upset. You're a fanatic, you're black. Rabbi Ovadia says you cannot turn on lights. And that's a classic example. Now, was there consensus? No, there wasn't a vote. But somehow everyone today, even if you're intellectually committed, and by the way, the Rav was more notel to be makil with lights than others on Yom Tov. But I'm positive that he would not be matir today lachatchila to turn on lights. The Chazon Ish already felt there was a suffix, he said, d'oraita. There was a whole shift here, and that consensus has taken place. Now, I'll give you another idea if you want to have another example of consensus, but lachakel, I don't want you only to think that the consensus is lachachmir. At times, the consensus can be lahakel. I'll give you another example of an issue which, if you take all the pages written in the 20th century, this issue has more written on it than any other halachic topic. Can anyone tell me what issue? No? Artificial insemination. You have no idea, because artificial insemination was invented 100 years ago. It doesn't, do you understand? And you have no idea, artificial insemination, you have no idea how many problems were solved by artificial insemination. Yeah. There are two types of artificial insemination. There's shlosha, shehim, shnayim. Number one, there's AIH. Number two, there's AIB or AID. AIB is a fake. It's just to make the husband feel better. So it's AIB is artificial insemination boost digestion. You know, I'm talking about AID is artificial insemination donor. It's one and the same. The other one is AIH, artificial insemination husband. Now, what does it mean, artificial insemination husband? Right away, you have to ask a very simple, logical question. If the husband can impregnate the wife, why do you need artificial insemination? Michael, am I right or wrong? A simple shaila. Gentlemen, you can have the most tragic cases in the world, medically and halachically. Medically, the husband is perfectly good. The wife is fine. The only thing is, her uterus is formed in such a way that the husband can never reach the point where he has to conceive the eggs, where he has to fertilize the eggs. It simply does not, he cannot reach there. She is formed in such a way that the sperms will not travel there. So there you have a terrible medical problem. Now, a terrible halachic problem that we have no solution for in modern times until this century. A woman and husband who are perfectly capable of childbearing, there's only one problem. All of you know a woman has a cycle. Nowadays, I see they sell books with charts. You can figure out the Vesa, Dana Kavua, Kavua. It's amazing what you can do today with computerization, computer programs. I'm glad I lived 50 years ago. I didn't have to know all this. But I saw today they actually put it on a computer. Now, a woman has a cycle. So we have what's called the normal. What does a normal cycle mean? Statistically, most women will bleed for 5 days, 6 days, 7 days. Then you can't shiv in a kiyum. And then the woman has two weeks, a little bit more than 2 weeks, when she is tahara labala. That's statistically. What about if you have a woman who taka is unwell for 9 days, and she ovulates, and what's going to happen is, by observing tarat mishpacha, a husband will never be able to reach the wife when she can conceive. And remember, shiv nikiyam is a suffix deraita. There's no way that you can push away shiv nikiyam. Can anyone tell me why? What suffix is it? Zava gadola. Shiv nikiyam, am I right, Shlomo? It's a suffix zava gadola, which is a din deraita. Again, I just, you know what I'm talking about. You have to already know sikhism, which I'm sure you do at your age. Now, there was no solution for this. You take AIH. Did you ever see the way AIH works? The doctor will have various, you know, as an expert has to be in this field, will have various syringes to avoid the room. I saw they can be shaped with curves. You have no idea what tricks they can do so he can reach the woman. Number one. Number two, AIH, he will take the husband's sperms and inject the woman at the moment she can conceive. We have solved the medical problem. We have solved the halachic problem. You have no idea the debate in the literature on this topic, AIH. I'm not talking now AID. Nowadays, in 1994, there is not a posek in the world who is a London and a Yerei Shamayim who will not permit AIH. Here, the consensus has been lahakel. The only shayla is, who can tell me where's the famous machlekes, Reb Moshe Feinstein with Reb Yitzchak Weiss, Shlomo? No, on AIH. That's why I said to you, I'm only talking AIH, not AID. Don't throw mamzeres at me. It'll take me 1 year to crawl out if you throw mamzeres at me. No, anybody. Gentlemen, you're not attuned. What's the machlekes? Well, she should go to mikveh. That's the only machloket where it's after she finished the blood and it's during the shiv nikiyam. Maybe she should be toivel before she gets the artificial insemination, the AIH, because perhaps she's not a zava gadola and she can be toivel. It's already 7 days since she became nida, and you want to remove the stigma of nida, zuhama, the Zohar in Vayikra. On the other hand, if you permit her to go to mikveh before shiv nikiyam are over, people will be makil. One will talk with another, and they'll say, who knows what can happen in our day and age where we have to deal with the youth worshipping the ground on which Michael Jackson and Madonna walk. We might remember, we're living in a world that's frightening today. So the Rav Moshe said, no, she shouldn't go to mikvah. The Midrash Yitzchak held, she should go to mikvah. I want to tell you what I have paskin lahalacha. In America, I've paskined, she shouldn't go to mikvah. In Israel, she should go to mikvah. I think you can understand why. Because in America, I'm frightened stiff. That's all they have to hear, that a woman went to mikvah. You understand what I'm saying? For the Shivanikim Arova, guts are lapitten with the way they look for heterim there. On the other hand, in Israel, Baruch Hashem, we have many from people, Landanim, it doesn't matter what color of their kippah, their tzaddikim, yureim, shleimim, we can tell them the truth, this is better, b'yod se l'chol ha'deyot, and remember, this is not mati l'bala, it's only to, if in case it should be taifas, so that the child should not be a benita, the ksoha we're worried about, but there's a consensus here. And this is another example of what we say by consensus. And this is the one thought I wanted to add. I didn't want you to walk away from here, his scheme, aleim, kol Yisrael, that they put it to a vote. If you put it to a vote, what did Chazal say? Behefkeira nichale. What did Chazal, what does the Torah say? Yetza lav adam ra minu rav. Despite what I said last Tuesday, I didn't explain myself, it doesn't matter. Today I'll contradict myself, I'm entitled. People, they'll vote out Shabbat, vote out Kashrut, vote out the whole Torah. What do they care, Shulchan Aruch? What do they care, Yerushalayim? What do they care? Give them 20% more in the stock market, and there's brainwashing. People are stupid. The radio, the interview shows, the TV, the leftist. Why are you against peace and Jewish lives will be saved and give it a chance and 200,000 Palestinians will return? It's not 800,000. And who needs Yericho anyway? There's a Greek by Islam. If we'll put democracy into halacha, we're finished. We wouldn't be sitting here. So please be aware. Makshin Olam. The words that Rav Yosef Weiss told me when I was a little kid, I was all of 14, 15, wearing a B'nai Akiva shirt. I had two great influences in my life then, and they gave me so much. One was Rav Yosef Weiss, the other one was, of course, the late, lamented Rav Meir Kahana, Hashem Yikom Damo, my Madrichin B'nai Akiva, and they gave me a world that still inspires me until this moment. Okay, I want to go further, but there was a question here. Yes, 1 second, Uri, right? Yeah, Uri, go ahead. You'll start to see that when the questions start coming up, the Pesukim will say, it's a rabbinic expression from Bava Metzia. Everyone went through this field already, and it seems to indicate, they'll say, Lakula, Lakhumra, we're not going to debate with this maskana. Understand? Now, while you were living the machleket on the Shulchan Aruch, you could have very well gone against the Shulchan Aruch. That's why the Levush was written. Today, anyone who's going to paskin like the Levush against the Shulchan Aruch, he better know what he's doing, because the world accepted Rabbi Yosef Cairo, not Rabbi Mordechai Yaffa. Follow? But it's their healthy intuitive. Yeah, right. The ongoing process of Torah Shabbat Peh. The masses are not involved in this. How can they be involved? What do they know? How learned are they? You follow me? But it's not something that you put... I only wanted to caution you, because you live in a double world. You might think it's Kim Alain. They put it to a vote. They had the Gallup poll, interview people. It doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way in Halacha. You should know that the Chazon Ish, I don't want to get involved now, but there was a terrible Shaila in 1940. What, 1940? A terrible shot. It was 1940. All of you know that the Mir Yeshiva Sungihara, Japanese man, Zeicher Tzadik Levracha, saved Torah in our days. A Japanese man, Senpo Sungihara. This was the consul in Kovna, and he gave out the travel visas to go to Japan, because from Japan they were supposed to go to some island that he knew it was, some island in the Caribbean. He knew that it was Lo Dubim, Velo Yar, but he gave out as much as he could to save as many Jews as possible until the Japanese government removed them because the Germans intervened. And so what is this man doing? He's letting all these Jews escape. Man died a few years ago. His children are still alive. This man literally saved Torah in our times. A Senpo Sungihara, Zeicher Tzadik Levracha. So the Mira, and the whole Mira Yeshiva was saved. to the last person. It's an amazing thing. It's an amazing thing. If no one else, anyone else in Europe, if a few Tels have survived, a few Slabatkas, 1 out of 10, 1 out of 20, 1 out of 30, Echad B'meya, Echad B'ir, and Mi Yeshiva was saved in toto because they did this crazy thing of taking, going against Gedolei Yisrael, who said not to do it, not to endanger your life, and they endangered their life and left the Soviet Union at that time and got to Japan. Now they get to go Kobe, Japan, and the Japanese have received them. This is before the Germans put on pressure, and they're transferred to Shanghai. Now all of you know that Kobe is beyond the dateline. And here Yom Kippur is coming. Shabbos, you don't have a problem. You observe 2 days. The first day you observe is Shabbos Sev, and the second day, Jay, you observe as you don't do Malacha. You don't have a problem. Donnie, what do you do Yom Kippur? You're going to fast day with 2 days on Yom Kippur? So they had this terrible problem. When is Yom Kippur? Is it on the Saturday of the Kobe community, or is it on Sunday? And I don't have to tell you, this is Yom Kippur. You're not dealing here with Tisha B'Av. And believe me, I never recall breaking the fast on Tisha B'Av, at least when I came of age. Understand? So don't think I'm mezalzel. Don't walk out of here saying that the Rebbe is a kal dat in Tisha B'Av. Chas v'chalila. But Yom Kippur is not Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av, I get many shilas from women, pregnant, nursing, I can be mekil. Yom Kippur, I get shilas from women, I shake, I shiver. Yom Kippur. So they didn't know what to do, they turned to Yerushalayim. Yes, yes, Shlomo. It's in Japan. Kobe is in Japan. Beyond the dateline, perhaps. According to 90% of the poskim. So what do you do? What do you do? That's the big question. Where the dateline begins, the Kuzari, etc. They didn't know what to do. They turned to Gedolei Yisrael, telegrams from back and forth between Japan and Palestine. So they called the meeting of all the big Talmid Chachamim in Jerusalem, in Israel, to come to Jerusalem and make a decision. The Chazon Ish refused to come. Now, a lot of people never forgave him. And he took an opposite stand. I'm not going to go into it now. He told them, fast on Sunday, eat on Saturday, fast on Sunday. Others said eat on Saturday. Others said fast on Saturday. That Yom Kippur fell on Saturday. Fast on Saturday, eat on Sunday. The wind-up was that most followed the majority opinion, fasted on Saturday, ate on Sunday. Those that had the strength and energy fasted 49 hours. Some followed the Chazon Ish. But what I want to tell you is the Chazon Ish came under a lot of criticism. And one of the things he said, why he didn't attend, he said he never yet heard since the Sanhedrin ended that you put Torah to a vote. He said it doesn't work that way. You debate an issue, you have a viewpoint. You stand on your issue. Ultimately, you stand on your viewpoint. Ultimately, it may be decided 10 years later, 20 years later, 100 years later, but he refused to go and let it be put to a vote. And I'm not taking, Evan, please understand me. Michael, I'm not saying good or bad. I'm not saying anything as far as a value judgment. I'm only telling you what the Chazon Ish said. And Nathan, I stand corrected, the animal, but I was close. My memory was good. Nathan, remember, he refused to go. And that was his fear, because Chas v'Chalila will start putting things to a vote, and this is why people oppose the chief rabbi. But please, the topic, we're not going to be able to define it black and white. You have to begin to learning, and you have to be deep in learning, and suddenly you'll see, wow, on AIH, there's a consensus. On turning on a light in Yantav, there's a consensus. There's a consensus. It's happened. When? I don't know the exact moment. But today, it's there. Yes. What's your name? Gad. Well, I can't see. Gad. Boy, your handwriting is worse than mine. G-A-D, last name? D-I-S-H-I. Are you an S-Y, Gad? And where do you live? Where's your hometown? Flatbush. Happy to see you here, Gad. You should know the best student I ever had. Nicolo is an S-Y, a rabbi in your community. You know what I'm talking about? You got him. What knowledge. What knowledge. If you're anything like him, you are fantastic. Yes, Scott, go ahead. Dish it out. Right. Right, right, right. Well, that's an issue. Right, that's an issue. Asay lecha rav. Chazal already said, Asay lecha rav. You're absolutely, when the issue hangs fire, you do with your Rebbe. You can do like Rabbi Tamlich, you can do like Rabbi Shachter. No, that's a question of following your Rebbe. Someday there will be a clear crystallization there. I think we have to know more science, and the Rabbanim have to know more science. You know, they shechted a pregnant animal. I don't have to tell you what went on. My vote was, it's said to be a pregnant calf or a pregnant lamb when the rabbis are out to decide a halachic issue. But there's no question that the baby was delivered 1 hour after the animal was dead. Just now, a woman was killed in a car crash, and the baby was delivered. And now, a woman going to mikveh, isn't that horrible? A young mother going to mikveh. A young mother, well, you'll ask why she's going to mikveh. Some Kabbalistic thing that if you go to mikveh before the baby is delivered, the baby will be born the Kedusha Vatara on the way to have a fourth child and killed in a car crash. God's a lapid. How many people have died in car crashes? So, and the baby was delivered after the mother died. Could you imagine a girl named after her mother? I mean, this is unheard of. You can be named after your father. But I knew a number of people who were named. I just buried a man a few weeks ago who was a dear friend of mine who was named after, never saw his father. But who ever heard of a child named after his mother? A girl named after the mother. And here you have it. The mother died and the child was delivered 1 hour later. You understand what I'm saying? You're right. Asay l'charav. Who do you follow? When it's a machloket and AID, who are you going to follow? It depends who you ask. You'll ask whoever you're Rebbe. Shlomo Zalman Orbach. You'll ask Rebbe Lichtenstein. Whoever you ask. Follow me. I want to tell you. You'll ask me AID? I don't know what to answer you. I'm not any smarter than the Rav. I once heard the Rav give a long lecture and the Rav said, I know everything. I know this sugya backwards and forwards. He said, I don't know everything, but this sugya I know. I don't know what the pasuk. Remember a year, was it a year, 2 years ago? The Rav said, I don't know what the pasuk. He's absolutely right. Because on one hand, if AID is permissible, it's only with gay. So you're taking a Jewish woman, impregnating her with the sperms of some SS trooper. You understand? Frightening. So you're going to get a kid. You know, then you come back to the whole question. Environment or heredity? There's no question, both play a role. I've seen many adopted children turn out crazy because they had the most beautiful environment. Who the heck knows who their mother was, who their father was? You understand? You can have the best environment, but if you have the genes of an alcoholic in you, of a drug pusher, of a drug addict, that's a lapin. Can send the kid to BMT, to the Y colon, and the wind up is he runs the biggest drug smuggling ring in all of greater Flatbush. You understand what I'm saying? So what, how do you paskin? So I intellectually can play games and say it's not mamzeret, Shlomo threw out the word mamzeret, it's not mamzeret, mamzeret is only through an act of intercourse, and you don't have to worry about brother and sister, Zereshogai, Rav Moshe, after all, Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. And on the other hand, the Minchat Yitzchak, and then the Tzitz Eliezer, Shrei Chai V'Kayim, you're taking over in Germany and in Israel, they all go to Germany. Germany and Munich, they have a hospital, one square block. That's only devoted to artificial insemination. One square block. You don't leave until they've succeeded. They have a 94% success rate. No, very nice. Himmler's son donated sperms and 50 women from Israel were impregnated with the sperms of Himmler's son. You understand what I'm saying? No, how do you paskin? But you have to ask Rav. There's no consensus. Believe me, there's no consensus yet. Michael. When I talk about the international dateline, I'll give it all to you. Yes, it's all written up. You can find it in Per Hadar, and you can find it, and there's a tremendous amount of material of that period. As a matter of fact, Rav Shlomo Yosef Zevin, in his magnificent volume, Lo Halacha, also has the whole story there. Okay, but what I'm giving you, I also heard Baal Peh from those, remember, I came to Israel 25 years ago. There was still Gedolim alive. I spoke with about that issue, and I heard with my own ears the way they criticized the Chazon Ish not coming. But I have to say that I understand why he didn't come. Okay, Now let me go one step further. Just let me see if I... Avraham, what's the last name? Goldman. Any relation to Ari Goldman? Not that you want to know of. Jason, I can't read the last name here. How do you spell it? K-N-A-P-E-L. And it's pronounced Nepel. The K is silent. Okay. Jason Nepel. Mark Fader. Mark, that's from the Fader family that was in YU in my time. Do you have relatives in Petach Tikva? Okay, so it's a different Fader family. Shlomo, I can't read your last name. Holman. Boy, you guys are real medical doctors. This is unbelievable. A class of MDs. Uri Cohn, Yaakov Kermeyer. Yaakov, one second. You have a brother living in the Talpiot. Last I knew he was living in Talpiot. He's married to Lisa. To Lisa Goldstein. That's your uncle, the Time Marches On. You're right. She was my student in Mechala many years ago. Send best regards. Okay? God Dishi, and of course, Jacob Rosenthal. Okay, gentlemen, now I want to come in. Now I want to move further, and I want to come into the heart of today's Shia. And let's go stage by stage. You now know my method. I don't want to confuse you, but I'm all excited with what I want to do. Zev, where is the laboratory? All of you know that you went to college, I went to college, and I went into the laboratory, and I had the schud I studied with of Shmuel Soloveitchik in the laboratory. We learned chemistry. We also learned a lot about the Soloveitchik family, and he used to tell stories about his brothers and his father and his grandfather. It was a great experience. But in the laboratory, you play with test tubes. I once made ether in the laboratory, and you make things. Where do you make halacha? Where do you construct halacha? And of course, here we come to response literature, which is the laboratory, the test tube of halacha. Now, when does response literature begin? Response literature actually begins, by the way, I have a piece on this in the Rakafat Aharon, which someday you'll bother me, I'll give it to you a gift, and you'll be able to get it there. But I have a nice article on response literature with a little background. But where does it begin? Right in the Gemara. Right in the Gemara. Why do I have to go to the Gemara? Right in the Mishnah. Right in the Mishnah. Right in the Torah. As a matter of fact, I'll make a statement. And you tell me whether I'm a Talmud Chacham or whether I'm a degenerate Amoritz. And my statement is very simple. One minute after the Torah is given, the Torah is outdated. No, I am an insightful Talmud Chacham. Look into the Torah. Benot Slavchad, all the laws of Yerusha were given Shlomo. And what happens, God? Benot Slavchad, the first time a man dies with only daughters. And they come running to him. Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't know what to answer. And he yet was able to. No, what was the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu? He yet was able to bury, to turn to HaKadosh Baruch. Understand? After Moshe Rabbeinu, no one. But no one can ask the question of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What is the Pasuk, Barry? Lo b'shamayim hi. The Gemara in Bav Metzi. Daf Nun Tet. Panur da'achnai. No, give me another example. No, Evan. Pesach Sheni. The most beautiful example of the ball. Vayhi and Hashem Shul Tameim. L'nefesh Adam. And they didn't get to do Pesach Rishon. They come running to Moshe Rabbeinu. He doesn't know what to do. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him. Give me another example. Mekashe Sheitzim. They didn't know how to execute. Beautiful examples. Right in the Torah of Shedet and Shivet. The first Mishnah. Ma'aseh Shabo Banav Shem Rabban Gamliel B'Neit HaMishnah. What does Beit HaMishnah mean? Like the BMT guys. They were hanging out. The Rishonim Leiters. Shavah Brachas. I'm not so sure they were right. They were hanging out in Ben Yehuda. They got back to BMT after midnight. They didn't know what to do. Nope. So that their father was Rabbi Gamliel. You ask your father, it's fantastic. You have a father, you can ask a Shaila. Can they say Kriyat Shema? It's after God, am I right or wrong? The Gemara is fulfilled. Iboy lehu, boy mine, shalchu mitam lahatam, from Palestine to Babylonia. Okay. I don't have to tell you.
the Golic period, already when we start moving away from the synthesis. I said last time, hundreds of questions, thousands of questions. Look at the Otz HaGaonim, so many manuscripts. Look at the Otz HaGaonim. I believe we have it in the BMT library. Binyamin Menashe Levin, I taught his great-grandchildren, devoted his life, Talmud of Rav Kook, to putting out the Otz HaGaonim. Avraham, by the time of the Rishonic period, we have for the first time volumes coming out that are just devoted to responsa literature. Some of these Rambams were put out at the time, some of them were edited later. For instance, Tshuvat HaRambam, Tshuvat of Rashi, Sefer Yosher of Rabbeinu Tam, Rabbeinu Geshem, and this becomes an entire new facet of literature, volume after volume of responsive literature. I don't have to tell you it goes on until today, and response literature is the wealthiest treasure chest of halacha, the history of halacha, how halacha is applied, new circumstances, how you deal with it, how you answer, and it's ongoing. Now, what are the shilas? What type of shilas do we have? The truth of the matter is, when it comes to shilas, there are three different types of questions. Yaakov, the least important. Name is Danny Rothenberg, Rabbi Doctor. But then he was a lot younger. Yaakov. Sometimes Talmidei Chachamim, and I don't know if it's ever happened in modern times, Talmidei Chachamim have time, what we call in the rabbinic aphorism, Lahagdil Torah Ulahadira. Imagine you have time to sit and learn, no one is disturbing you. So if no one is disturbing you, to show up your ability, sometimes worry, you make up questions. You follow me, Gad? You make them up. Never really happened. But you say, what happens if you slaughter a cow and inside the stomach of the cow you find three needles located in three different locations, slightly punctured, greater puncture, and the guy writes an entire dissertation. Now, can anyone tell me, tradition claims that many of his questions never happened. He thought them up in songs. The classic Yesh Shlomo. Wow. Yaakov, that boy, that Shlomo, the Rebbe loves him. You are like waving a red flag in front of a bull. Shlomo, you're looking at the man who gave six world-class lectures on the Psamim Rosh. Don't mention that name in this classroom or you'll be slaughtered. That apikores, that maskil, that phony. We erased the tape. The Psamim Rosh has not been mentioned. Shlomo, you will get your answer when I decide to deal with the Psamim Rosh again. I want a classic Rishon. What do you say, Uri? Beautiful. Kol hakavod to a YU product. Take a look. First rate Talmud Chacham. Yes. The great Reb Yisrael Isserlein was from the Gedolei HaRishonim in the final period of Germany. The Truma Tadeshim, this is, Uri will tell you, a classic collection of response literature. Tradition has it that in the Truma Tadeshim, not in anyone here, Uri, you're familiar with the Truma Tadeshim as K'tavim U'Psakim. Tradition has it in his K'tavim U'Psakim, those were real issues that actually happened. In the Truma Tadeshim, he made it up. You, how does Uri know this? How does Aaron Rakefet know this? Who the heck is Rakefet that he should say a thing like this? Gentlemen, the Shach Sefet. Look into your favorite Sefer this year, your bosom buddy, Yoredeya, Siman Kuf Tzadi Vav. Sif Katan Chav, in the Truma Tadeshim, right in the middle. The Halonoda Shashelet Shebetruma Tadeshim, Asam Mari, Mari is Moreno Harab Isalain Yisrael. Bal hatshuvat natsmo, v'lo shesharalu achedim, kimo bepiskei ktavav. Isn't that unbelievable? The Shach brings down a tradition that the Sheilot in the Truma tradition were not really asked. They never happened. He was sitting in his study. He had all the time in the world. There was no telephone then. Rabbanim weren't expected to visit the sick, to bury the dead, to preach at weddings. Rabbanim were just expected to sit and learn. This is true. Jade, what I'm telling you is true. I don't have time now, but I'll get to it. I'm going to develop some new lectures on the Rav. I'm up in heaven. You don't know. I'm in heaven and I'm in hell at the same time. In heaven when I sit and learn with the Rav, and I'm in hell when I have to turn on the Israeli radio and see what democracy is doing to us. So he had time. He lahagel Torah lahadira. He started writing. If this happens, now why does the Shach say this story? Let's go one step further. Why is this so important? Can you tell the class why does the Shach mention this? Because perhaps, Dani, if it wasn't halacha lemaisa Avraham, you can paskin against the Mari. If there's a machloket rishonim, you follow me, Barry? This is a big reason why you can paskin against the Truma Tadeshin, because it was not halacha lemaisa, it was lahagdil Torah lahadir. That's why the Shach mentions this. But that's the classic example. There are other examples. The reason I don't want to get involved with the Besamim Rosh, because there we're dealing with a literary forgery. And once we get involved with the Besamim Rosh, it's not just that he made up the questions, but he put the questions and put the answers into the mouth of the Rosh. Here is a person writing in Berlin in the 1760s, and he's making believe ki'ilu it was written by the Rosh 600 years earlier. You follow me, Shlomo? So that's more than just not halacha, that's a literary forgery, and that's a big problem. Why it happened, and how it happened, and who Reb Shaul Berlin was, etc. Yes, Michael? Just wait patiently, in a week or two you'll understand very well. But that's why the Shach mentions it. Because it may very well be, when it's not halacha lemaisa, we can take a rishon against the tradition. Michael, no savlanitis. You're my student 2 years now. Maturity, patience. Now, I want to say, he's asking the same question you asked, but no one's giving me a chance. We'll get there. Now, I want to say in parentheses, because I don't want you to shoot me down a year from now when you finish with your day, you have time to read and you start. Now, the truth of the matter is, I don't know if he's still there, but the name Professor Shlomo Eidelberg mean anything to you? Professor Eidelberg headed up Jewish studies at Stern College for many decades. He was a graduate of Drapsi College. Lo and behold, who did he do his doctorate on? Basically the Chivot of the Truma Tadeshin. In his dissertation published, anyone know what Drapsi College was? It doesn't exist now for many years. Let me not take anything for granted. Jacob Rosenthal knows because he comes from Philadelphia. It was an independent graduate school for Judaic and cognate studies, the oldest one in the United States, organized, I believe, in 1902 in Philadelphia. The first doctoral graduate of Drapsi College was Bernard Revel, the president and founder of Yeshiva College, which later becomes Yeshiva University. Now, Shlomo Eidelberg published his doctorate at Drapsi in 1962, Jewish Life in Austria in the 15th century. On page 51 and further, he disagrees with the Shach. And he claims that the Chivot really happened, that this tradition is incorrect. Now, I don't want to sound arrogant, but if there's a machloikas, Professor Eidelberg and the Shach, I'm inclined to think the Shach was correct. I cannot believe that the Shach would record something in his sefer, and it's something that has an inference halachically. The Shach was alive so many years ago, it has to be a living tradition. So, I don't know. Eidelberg tries to bring some proofs. Could be the issue hangs fire, but nevertheless, this is what the Shach says. You have to see Eidelberg inside, check the sources, perhaps reach your own conclusion. Obviously, if it's not a question, halacha l'maisa, just l'hagdil Torah l'hadira, that this guy was sitting around, he dreamt up a whole question, that a mechlika spoon fell into a fleishika pot, and he took the spoon out and put it into another fleishika pot, and what happens? Alright, it's a beautiful question, he's mefalpil, brings down your adaya. This is, listen, like the exams you'll be taking, doesn't Rabbi Miller, I remember in Shabbos, he once gave an exam, suppose you're invited to the home of Baron Soloveitchik or the home of Rav Moshe Feinstein on Shabbos, and he serves you a watermelon with pits. What do you do with the pits on Shabbos? Okay. No boy in BMT was ever invited to, or no boy in the Wayu Kola was ever invited to Rav Moshe's home, or perhaps to Baron Soloveitchik. Yes. You serve watermelon on Shabbos. What do you do with the pits? Lahagdil Torah Lahadir, the whole Shiloh of Bore. Rav Moshe had one viewpoint, the Baron had another, etc. Okay. Excuse me? Swallow them. To swallow them, I don't have to be a big chacham. I also have to have a good doctor after Shabbos. Yes, yes, Yaakov, yes. Yes. It says it's a tradition like that. Yeah, he's been... No, yes, the Nafmunis, he doesn't want a paskin like the Truma Tadashi. Yeah, I'm telling you, and you don't want to pass down. I'm like, you'll understand why in a few weeks' time, you'll understand very clearly, but I don't want to get involved now because it'll confuse you in today's lecture. I'm heading for something else. Okay, two. There's another type of question. And these are the questions that really happen in life, but these are outlandish, outmodish, idiosyncratic. Can't really say halacha stands and falls by these questions. For instance, if you're familiar with the Sholom Eshev, a sheikh had slaughtered while he was hypnotized. Okay, you can interesting question. You're hypnotized. You're not a badak. You are a badak. Is the slaughtering good? No. How many sheikhim do you know slaughtered while they were hypnotized? No, there was a tremendous question. 100 years ago, a kid was born in Vienna, a Siamese twins, they lived a while, Jewish kids. Suddenly the question came up, Siamese twins, how many pairs of tefillin do they put on? Two heads. Only one arm. Alright. Can the falpul sign? A robot, the whole question, can you count the robot as part of a million? No, a Jewish robot. Jews made him. A robot. What was he called? The golem. Or in modern times, there was a tremendous debate. New in the 60s with Azriel Rosenfeld and Tova Lichtenstein. Remember what happened? Azriel Rosenfeld wrote a whole article, if you're an astronaut going to the moon, how many times you have to daven, how many times you have to say Kiddush Levana. And Tova Lichtenstein, and you know, you have to understand that when I saw it, it's very difficult. I trust you'll understand this. It's a tremendous burden being born with the name Soloveitchik. Understand? It's not so simple. And for Tova to take a public stand, because right away people will say, her father, this, that, she wrote a letter that these articles cheapen halacha. This is what we're worried about in halacha, going to the moon, how many times to say Kriyat Shema, how many times to stand on your head. It cheapens halacha. Wrote a letter, printed in tradition, where she took issue with Lenny Rosenfeld, who's a first-rate Talmud Chacham, YU graduate, world-class physicist, the Shem Dover from my era, a little older than I am. Tova Lichtenstein is also my year, slightly older than I am. You know, these are all right. These questions happen. The man on the moon, I don't deny it. The shaykh who's hypnotized, the Siamese twin. Believe me, in the 20 years I taught in BMT, you came up with a few lulus of questions. But this is not the backbone of the halacha of Shelet and Shevet. The third example, of course, this is really what 98% of response literature is all about. What I call the bread and butter daily questions, day in and day out. You can't escape them. You gave examples before. Lo aleinu, people die. How do we know they're dead? Every minute of the day, people are dying. Transplants, brain death, heart death, circulatory system, respiratory system. artificial insemination. Lo aleinu, when things go well, you have children. But you know, perhaps 1 out of 10 couples have a lot of difficulty having children. And it's not pleasant, and they have to go through medical tests, and then you have terrible Shilohs. No? Day in and day out. Gelatin. How many tshuvot have been written about gelatin? And even now, there are great happenings in America. Rabbi Ida came up with it once again. They slaughtered cows, pulled out the gelatin. You know what I'm talking about. To make the gelatin, Baron Cutler did it for Bartons. It lasted for 20 years. Now they did it again. A Talmud Chaver of mine, David Holzer, in Florida, discovered a way to get gelatin with the proper rise from fish skins. He has a patent on it, whatever they call it, and he has the OU already, and they're starting to produce, and that's going to be, imagine, if that really works out, it's not only going to be parva without any shela, but it's also going to be a lot healthier than what they get out of animals. So gelatin, this has gone on for years. Reb Chaim Moisa, how much was written in cheese, and Rabbi Soloveitchik, and crepe cheese, and ice cream, and travel in England. Go find one ice cream in England without gelatin, outside of the Snowcrest ice cream, which makes Israeli ice cream look like the Mount Everest. Follow me, Nathan? Yeah, this is day in and day out. Boreh, Shabbos, food. I mean, there's so many examples of what goes on. And Minyanim without Kohanim and without Leviim and Kriyat HaTorah. Every aspect of life. Every aspect of life. And give you a simple example. Well, the world is shaking. Sweet bread. Everyone does this sweet rolls. You don't have to make a motzi. No, you don't have to make a motzi. Nowadays, show me who doesn't make a motzi already. The famous Rav Moshe Feinstein on the plane. You know the story where Rav Moshe gets up to wash and the stewardess says to him, Kvot HaRav, Zot Mezonot, Lo Tzrichim Litol Yadayim. She's telling Rav Moshe, a nice stewardess, and she was trained to tell religious passengers that you don't have to wash. This is a sweet roll. Nowadays, I can only eat any roll on the plane, because who can go wash on a plane? And now already they serve regular rolls, because they know already. You're a Heschel Shechter, already instituted with the OU. There's no such thing as sweet rolls. You're Kaveya Suda, Ribbono Shel Olam. You sit down on a plane, you have a roll. You're sitting, you're eating, it's your main meal. And you're having cake for dessert, and you're having rechfes and noodles in the middle. It's Kaveya Suda, Ribbono Shel Olam. What new? These are shilas, day in and day out. Of course, this is the bread and butter of the response literature. Now, just like there are three types of questions, there are three types of answers. First of all, there are the answers that are very brief, to the point. Not a lot of sources. Halacha l'maisa, you reach a maskana immediately. Where do you find shuvot like that? The Gainim and among the Rishonim, because they were world-class authorities. When Rashi wrote a shuvah, he wrote 10 lines. The Rambam's shuvah, sometimes the most difficult halachic matters, are handled in 2 paragraphs. I can think of world-famous shuvot of the Rambam, they're not more than 1 page. Does the guest say Asher Kedushanu b'mitzvot Tzav? Can he say Shasen Yisum Lavoteinu? A page, he's answered the question. The Goyim? 4 lines, 5 lines, look into the Yotza HaGoyim. They were world-class authorities. We're dealing with Rishonim Kamalachim, as I said last week. And when they paskined, everyone shuddered. Okay, give me a chance. Then we have another type of tshuva that we also find in the Rishonim, and certainly among the Achronim, where you write a tshuva, and you already have to cite sources, you have to use binah, you know, to l'damot miltal miltah, to show similarities, to show various sugyot in the Gemara. But everything you do is for the sake of the halacha. You don't get sidetracked.
In modern times, I can give you an example, the Malamed Lahawil, something you're familiar with, Reb David Tzvi Hoffman. There already, I can't say he's in one paragraph, but he certainly never gets sidetracked. He quotes the Gemara, the Psak, what is necessary. He wants to reach a Maskana Lahalacha. He's a Malamed Lahawil. It's not Rashi, it's not a Rishon, it's not the Rambam. He has to be longer and lengthy and deal with more material. Then at times, we have what has become the classic modern method of writing Shavat, where you not only cite many sources, but sometimes you get involved in understanding the sources themselves. Where do you see that already? The Nodab Yehuda, the Chatam Sofer. You can go through the Chatam Sofer and pull out hundreds of chidushim of the Chatam Sofer and understanding Gemara, Rashi, and Tosfot in the middle of his tshuva. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein. I don't know, Mike, I'll give you a simple example. Rabbi Moshe gets involved the whole question of Geirim and Kabbalat Mitzvot, which is a burning issue, Bizman Hazer. Again, that's an example of something day in and day out, thousands of questions, Kabbalat Mitzvot. Nope. Rabbi Moshe deals with it in 8 or 9 basic tshuva. As a matter of fact, that's the only issue I know of in Rabbi Moshe Feinstein. No one has ever proved me wrong. And I've said tshuva on this in front of the Dolei Yisrael, and everyone, their eyes pop open and say, wow, you're right. It's the only issue that Rabbi Moshe ever changed his mind. It's an amazing thing. You can actually see a development of thought, how he paskins one way in the 1920s, and he paskins another way in the 1950s, and yet another way in the 1960s, where he actually changes his mind. Meha katzer, ela katzer. There are reasons why, I can't go into it now. But what's fascinating, there we'll go into a whole analysis of the Gemara in Shabbat, Taflamet Aleph, with the three Geirim who came to Hillel, and Almanacha Talamdeni, et Kala Torah, Al Regalachat, Almanat, and Amoni Mekabal Torah Shabbatab, and Torah Shabbatab, and that'll be a coin gadol. And in all these cases, they'll accept them. How can it be? There's no Kabbalat Mitzvah. Do you follow me, Barry? What's happening here? And Ramesh does no whole analysis of the Gemara, how it happened, what it means, the Rashi, the Tosfot, it's beautiful. So not only do you have the Gufa Halacha, but you have many side benefits. So let me reiterate, one second, Gadi, anything you want to ask what I've said? Okay. Let me reiterate. Shedet and Shivet are the laboratory. It's forged there. It's formed there. There's no life without response literature. There's no response literature without life. And here you have the interaction, and this is where the crystallization is taking place, and this is where the test tubes are at work, and this is where we're putting together the various chemicals, the sources, we're trying to reach answers, and everyone's going to see what we write, and this one comes, and that one comes, the machloket begins, and you go back and forth, you have to defend yourself, or you change your mind, and it's a fascinating, exciting process. And there are three types of questions. One, like the Truma Tadashin, like the Torah Lahadira. What? Questions that happened. What? Come on. How many times will a Siamese twin have the question of tefillin? Or questions like Aguna, Mamzeret, and all the other examples I gave, where we have tens of thousands of examples from response literature, and as long as man walks the face of the earth, we'll have questions like this. And then there are three types of answers. Answers that are very brief. The Goyim wrote like that. The Rishonim wrote like that. Today we could not write like that anymore. No one has that type of authority. Maybe for your own followers, it could very well be when the Lubavitcher Rebbe in the previous years, when a chassid asked him a question, he answered in three words. Of course, it's a chassid asking. Maybe the Chazon Ish and Bnei Brak, there are many legendary stories, what the Chazon Ish said, all right, but these were people who accepted the Chazon Ish. Maybe with the Rav, or one time a Talmud of the Rav, a friend of mine, today he's chairman of the board of Bernard Rebbe Graduate School, Erwin Shapiro, should only be well, maybe some of you know him. Wonderful, wonderful human being, Jew, unfortunately ill. So Erwin Shapiro once asked the Rav, what do you do for Yontif Sheni? He owns an apartment in Israel. Oh, the Rav answered him, Shapiro,
You cannot fold Kedusha in your pocket. Well, that's the rule. I told Irwin, when I hear that from you, I know the Rav had to say, because you are not smart enough to make that up. Only the Rav is capable of answering like that. Not Rakefer, and not Shapiro, and not David Miller. None of us could answer so beautifully. In 1 minute, the Rav said enough flumdis that you can speak 1 year of commentary. You cannot fold Kedusha into your pocket. You follow me, Jay? The Rav. So the Rav is answering Talmud. He answered him that way. But no one writes Trivet like that. Then you have Trivet that are written like Halacha. You recite the sources. By the way, Sfadim also wrote like that, even today. You don't get involved in the Gemara. You just need what you need for the Makarit with the thrust being Halacha L'maisa. But Avraham, then you have like the Nodabi Huda, like the Chatam Sofer, already like Rav Moshe Feinstein, where you're not just writing La Halacha, you get involved in a Gemara, the Shaklin Tire, you give a Hezbollah, you know, Zeitig, as they say. Uri, on the side, it's a side benefit. You can accept Rav Moshe Pesach or not accept the Yaakov, but the joy of how he explains the Gemara in Shabbat is right with you. Now, gentlemen, we come to the high point of this year. And hear me out, because on this we're going to finish. Fine. How do we approach response literature? How do we write Shivat? And here what's amazing is you have two totally different approaches. On one hand, you have the Sfadic approach, and as best exemplified, Bizman Hazeh by Rav Avadya Yosef. Many of the Hungarians followed this approach. Tremendous Bekiyot. Tremendous Bekiyot. Rav Avadya speaks, it's a talking computer. And he knows it all by heart. I have to tell you, Rav Avadya knows it all by heart. I know myself, I often tell the story of Rabbi Koopman years ago. I put out a quintus on Shalat and Shivat in the Mechola. And Rabbi Koopman gave me a shiv he got from Rav Avadya to the Mechola. It was a question of accepting money from a Reform synagogue. And he asked me to edit the shiv, and I later published it. Later it was published in a memorial volume from Rabbi Chetzkel Sana, and to Rabbi Koopman's consternation, because it was printed by Yeshivat Hebron and they don't consider Mechola firm enough, they left out Rabbi Koopman's name, as if the tshuva was written, you know, everyone has great ethics today, great morals, so they left out his name like the tshuva was written to the man on the moon. You understand, Lechvod, you did the Arab Goyim, desh, like they did to Rav Soloveitchik, like I told you this year, last year, with Chasson Ish, I spoke about it in Manhattan, whatever it was, how in the Igrot Chazon Ish and the Igrot Achiesa, they leave out the Rav's name. All right, I left that Rabbi Kuppler's name. So I noticed when I was editing it that every Gemara Rav Avadya quoted, he didn't quote properly. A word was in the wrong place, the noun was before the verb. Every Rambam he quoted was not quoted properly. And then it hit me between the eyes, he was quoting everything by heart. And I'd spoken with him at learning a number of occasions. He knows everything by heart. It's amazing, amazing memory. I don't know Aaron Lichtenstein, if he quotes Gemaras by heart, word by word, I don't think so. I think it's only Rav Avadya could do it, and there was a Rav Avram Kroll, Zechatanik Lebrach Yerushalayim, a Gera Chassid, a Warsaw survivor. He also was legendary for this. Well, it's a certain memory, a certain blessing. So, Rav Avadya is mind-boggling. You read a tshuva of his, the whole world is there. Then you take the Lithuanians, some of the Polish, some of the Polish, the Lithuanians, different approach altogether. Of course, the basic Rishonim, the Shulchan Aruch, the Nosei Kelim, the great Achronim, the Nodabi Yehuda, the Chatam Sofer. Very little beyond that. And all of you know, familiar with Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe has a student who
was a sheikhet in, where was it, South Carolina, Charleston, I believe, that area. I forgot what was his name, Ephraim Greenwald. What was the name of his Talmud? Time and again, writes to Rav Moshe. He put out a sefer, I think it's called Rivrot Ephraim. And time and again, he writes to Rav Moshe, did you see this achron, that achron, the shoulder, Meshiv, the Malam, and the Olil, Rav Moshe writes back to him, I never saw it, I don't want to see it, don't bother me, I don't have the sefer. You might think the Malam, and the Olil is a rare sefer, I could lend it to Rav Moshe, what's the big deal? One block from his home, there was telling the Malam, and the Olil on Canal Street. All he had to do was go and talk to his firm, and for $5, he'd own the Malamed Lahoyel. If they take money from him, Rav Moshe Feinstein would probably take the check and not cash it. The signature's worth more than the check. Moshe Dayan never paid for a thing in his life. All he did was give checks, signed it to Moshe Dayan, and no one cashed the check. Right or wrong, if Rabbi Soloveitchik gave you a check, you got to be an idiot to cash it. Right? Am I right or wrong? If I had a check from Ty Cobb today, I'd be wealthier than I am. I do have a personal letter from Ty Cobb, so Sotheby's wanted to give me $400 in 78. I wouldn't part with it. I was very hard pressed for money. Then I was young, I had no income, children, little children. Worried stiff, I'd marry them. What if I priced the letter at Sotheby's? $400, 1978. I said, what? Nothing doing. You know, they put it up at auction, they get thousands for it. Personal letter from Tyrus Cobb, Enklingekite, Gedolim Hasheba Aretz. You're a Canadian, you only know Oldie Root, you don't know what I'm talking about. Gentlemen, Rav Moshe doesn't want to look. Ephraim Greenblatt, doesn't want to look, doesn't want to look. He tells me it's this Talmud. Now, what's happening here? Now, look into the Yalkut Joseph. The Yalkut Joseph, put out by Rav Avadya Yosef. There are many Yalkut Yosef. This is the first one that he put out. You look into the introduction of the Yalkut Yosef, and Gadi, he, pardon me, rips the hell out of the Ashkenazim who don't cite all the Achronim, who don't go into great detail, and he rips them apart. And Rabbeinu Shalom, he quotes Rab Chaim Palagi. I'm quoting now from page 13. And he goes on and on, quoting Rabbi Chaim Palagi, and he adds flames to the fire, and Rabbi Avadya time and again. This is not just in the Yalkut Yosef, all of you know, whenever he speaks, and now, of course, when Rabbi Avadya stands in one corner, and the Lithuanian world in another corner, and Rabbi Avadya, whenever he can, he takes the needle, and he speaks, and he rips apart the Ashkenazim who don't know how to paskin, and don't consult the Achronim, and don't have this knowledge, and a mavaza the Torah, and think they're balgaver and arrogant, and they know them, this, okay. Now, who's right? Who's wrong? And I'm talking learning. There's no politics now. I have to tell you, when it comes to politics, I have to, in order to save my life, I cannot deal with these people politically. In other words, Rav Avadya is a politician. I consider the words I have to say about him are not for public consumption. He destroyed the Jewish people. There are reasons why. I know him personally. It doesn't matter. I'll quote the Minchat Elazar. Don't jump on me and say, how do you quote an anti-man who hated Zionism and whatnot? In learning, everyone is equal. Hashkafa-wise, some were right, some were wrong. Let God judge, not me, or I will judge in accordance with the rules. The Rav told me, some of you have heard my Hashkafa lectures, you know what I'm talking about. But they have to understand that. I'm talking now in learning. I'm not here to get involved in any politics. Who's right, who's wrong? And there's no question that Rav Avadya's learning and his method and the Shalat and Shivar and the Bar Ilan computer or Rav Moshe, it's worlds apart. It's worlds apart. This is true. Now, I know, at first glance, of course, to try to say, well, Rav Avadya quotes so many more sources, has to be a lot better. I'll tell you what the problem is with Rav Avadya. There's a double problem. One problem is Lo nitna Torah l'malachei hasharei. All of you know this is Klal Gadol Omru b'Torah. Tosfot already in Kedushin, I believe it's Samach Vav Amud Aleph. Anyway, in the sugya of Yanai HaKohen and whatnot, it sits. You know what I'm talking about? It sits. Hakim lem betzitz shebenei nav. No, the truth of the matter is, how is a Kohen Gadol allowed when he finishes the avoda? He has to strip naked immediately. Bigdei kohanim lav lehanot nitnu. How can he keep them on until he goes back to the meltecha, to the locker room? So Tosfos already explains, lo nitnu tar lemalchei sharei. You can't expect a Kohen Gadol to strip naked in the middle of the Beis Hamikdash. You have to give him a chance to go back. I mean, he's a sugin yop. That's a cloud in all of Shas. When you start already quoting all the Achronim, have you quoted them all? Like we said in Tuesday's class, have you said all the praises of God? Well, then you need a computer. And then you get involved in the whole question. Does a computer paskin, or does a human being paskin? And of course, I feel very strongly that the human being has to paskin, not the computer. So that's one problem with Rav Avadya's Shita. There's another problem, and this always comes out when you read Rav Avadya's Tshuvat. He quotes volumes, he sees Pardes, he sees what was written. So when it comes to the American rabbis of the 20s, the 30s, the 40s, I think you know that the man sitting behind the microphone knows a little bit about that period. I know these people. I knew these people. I wrote about these people. I published about these people. I studied these people. Studied their writings. I once had a long talk with David Miller about this. We both agreed. You know, he quotes people that were great, great people. You quote Rav Moshe Feinstein. Fine. You quote Rav Blazer Silva. Fine. Quote the Satmar Rav. Sukkotel and Torah. Quotes other rabbis in America were phonies, were boors, sold heksher down the road. So they wrote an article on Torah that appeared in Pardes. They paid off Rabbi Pardes to publish it. Anyone could get an article in Pardes over the years. It was just a question of money or yichus. If he wanted to do Rabbi Lam a favor, or Rabbi Belkin a favor, understand? You know what I'm saying? It's a tradition. Yom HaShishi here. It was a whole question. Something came up there, and they wanted to release some scandalous material, so they called me. So I don't get involved with this. They go to Yom HaShishi. No, they won't take it because they're paid off by Shas, so they're not going to publish anything against their rabbis. But they went to Yatay Neman. Yatay Neman took it. But it doesn't have the same reading audience. This guy was a boor in any Reichheit. All his kids ate Chazer on Yom Kippur. With all due respects to America, but when everyone turned out that way and you're going to quote his opinion and then you start adding up, seven say this, six say this, it's frightening. You know, you just can't treat everybody equally. There's a Chatam Sofer and there's a Noda Behuda. There's a Reb Moshe Feinstein and there's a Tzitz Elias. There's a Minchat Yitzchak. There's a Novak. There's a Yabiyoma. There's a Yaskil Avdei. So these are the problems with Reb Moshe Shita. Pardon me, Reb Avadya Shita. And I cannot say when he rips the hell out of the Ashkenazim, he's totally right. He has one approach. I understand it. I honor it. I value it. I appreciate it. I look up to it. I cannot say he's totally right. See, now the Lithuanian approach was different. And here I'll talk a little bit about the Rav, even though the Rav wasn't a posek. But you'll understand Rav Moshe through the Rav, because they came basically from the same base medrash. When Rav Heschel Schechter eulogized the Rav, spoke about the Rav, told stories, then published, I heard two tapes of Rav Heschel speaking, one to Balabatan in Queens and one to the Yeshiva, and I read the article in Morasham, where he writes memoirs of the Rav. Fascinating for me. But when he talks about the Rav as a Posek, I get very frightened. Because he said something that you can misinterpret. I know what he was trying to say. Did anyone hear the talk? He said that he got involved. He said the Rav didn't like little details. He said, he gave an example with a Sefer Torah, with Reb Chaim, and suddenly they wanted to be Machmir, was written according to the Shittat Beit Yosef. And what about the other Shittat? And Reb Chaim Pashkin, no, the Sefer Torah is Kasher, and you don't have to worry about the other Shittat, this is the Beit Yosef. So Reb Heschel built on that, that the Rav, he doesn't like that the Rav didn't like him, he didn't like the little details, the nitty gritty. He didn't use the word nitty gritty, but that was what Reb Heschel was saying. If you listen to him at face value and don't know what he means, someone can walk away and say, boy, Rabbi Soloveitchik was conservative, he didn't like dinner. That sounds like Dennis Prager speaking. Dennis Prager says, I eat kosher. I eat in every restaurant, but I eat kosher. So someone asks him, what about the dishes? I don't eat dishes. No, Dennis Prager doesn't eat dishes. That's beautiful. I guess we eat dishes. Baruch Hashem, I haven't eaten a dish. I remember when I ate a dish last. It's a long time, you understand? He throws out all, he doesn't eat dishes. A little detail like that, he doesn't eat dishes. There's no Shaila, no Shach, no Taz, no Yoredeya, no Benyoma, no Eina Benyoma. You follow me? Dennis Prager Dani has none of these problems. So you can walk away, he says, the Rav didn't like little details. It came out very, very, you know, I heard in the tape. I don't know why no one stopped him there. You should have asked right away, what do you mean, Rabbi? No, what he meant is, and this is the Rav. When the Rav made up his mind, you couldn't sway him. See, the Rav took a certain gestalt. This is the sugya. This is the heart of the sugya. Please. You couldn't push him off. I heard via tape 20 years ago, at the end of the shiur, this kid comes over and he says, Ray, I had a question with tefillin. If I remember correctly, the Ritzua, the guy who blackened them, did it Shlo Lishma, and it's a Machlokes Achrayim, he wanted to be Yotzein to blacken them again, but it's a Shaila of Ein Ktav Al Gabi Ktav Al Gabi Ktav, you know what I'm talking about? The old Shaila with Ged, etc. So the Rav, no, the Rav, there's no necessity, it's not necessary, we cut in, you don't need it, isn't it? So the kid is arguing with the Rav, he says, but I want to be Yotzein, you know, for the other shittas, the other achrayim, the Rav didn't understand what this kid was talking about. You know, I hear on the tape, the kid is trying to convince the Rav, can I find a solution? And you don't need a solution. No, the halach is not like that. And you couldn't sway the Rav. See, achronim didn't sway him. He took a certain point of view, that's it. We weren't dealing here with the Machlokes Rashi and Tosfos and how to be Yotzei Tkiyat HaShofar according to Rabbeinu Tam and Rashi. Dealing here with two Favafon Achroinim that are having a little problem. The Rav looked at it a different way. See, once he took a point of view, you couldn't sway him. And that's Rav Moshe. See, what Ephraim Greenblatt didn't understand, you can shoot all the tshuva in the world. You're going to shoot a Shaul Meshav at him. You're going to shoot a Melamed Lahoyel at him. You're going to shoot a Beit Yitzchak at him. Rav Moshe didn't get excited. He already had a certain dacher, a certain guy. You understand what I'm saying? He already moved along a certain path, and the Achroinim could not sway him. And this is where the Lithuanians went the way they went, and why they didn't add up Achroinim, and why they didn't get involved in Shittat of Achroinim. And this is why there was, in the Rav's world, there was a lot of critique of the Mishnah Berurah. We kids were raised, the Mishnah Berurah was like the Posek Achron. If you mentioned to the Rav the Mishnah Berurah, Posek Achron, the world would cave in. Because the Mishnah Berurah added, what did he do? He added up New Jay. What did he do? He added up Achroinim. The Rav could never add up Achroinim. Who? Ribbono Shel Olam, this Achron the Rav considered the bigger London. This Achron was the lesser London. This Achron his family didn't hold from. This Achron the family faced the Keren Ora and never left Reb Chaim's desk. You understand? They were Achroinim and they were Achroinim. So it's not that I'm telling you you can neglect Achroinim altogether. Chas v'chalila. This, of course, who neglected Achroinim altogether? No. The Rocket Shepherd. Reb Yosef Frozen. You look into the Rocket Shepherd. You know I'm talking about the Marie Rosen. You look into the Reb Yosef Frozen. The Minsker Rav. He neglected Achroinim. But he also neglected the Shulchan Aruch. The Rocket Shepherd walked as an equal with the Rambam. The man had a mind. But Shlomo, no one in the world, Paskins like the Rocket Shepherd. He's the only one that held. When you have a civil marriage, Nu Yaakov, what do you need? A get shichra. You follow me? He held, Seb, you need a get shichra from a civil marriage. You show me one person in the world who paskins like the Rakat Shava. He went too far. But the machloket between Rav Ovadia and Rav Moshe and Hada Paskin is a legitimate machloket. And I'm not convinced that either one is right. On Rav Ovadia's viewpoint, it brings us to computerization. And that frightens me. Kilo nitna Torah l'malachei hasharet. Lo aleinu, we have to live with what we have. Our kefir is teaching Torah, the Rabbim in Yerushalayim. It's a disgrace. But that's what we have in our generation. You understand? We have to live with it, Shlomo. On the other hand, I agree. If we're only going to go, you know, the Rav was not a post-sick mufak. So he could afford, he took a viewpoint, but Rav Moshe had to deal with classic questions. And sometimes you just can't throw out the achronim. You have to consider, you have to know who. Certain achronim broke the bank. Certain achronim carried the day. You just can't add up. The Mishkanot Yaakov and the Beit Ephraim, the Litvak loved the Lundus. And see, the Mishnah Brewer in that respect was more like a Hungarian. And of course, I'll end off the class. That's the unbelievable story. It may be anecdotal, but it's a magnificent story that Reb Chaim meets the Mishnah Brewer, Reb Chaim Brishka. And he says to the Mishnah Brewer that for Ayat Sitkis, I'll take a Dabstein Mel London. For your Tzitkut, you should be a bigger London. And the Mishnah Brewer answers him, and for your Lamdonut, it get Dabstein Mel Tzadik. That for your great Lamdonus, you have to be a greater Tzadik. But that was Reb Chaim. That was his approach. That was Brisk. That was Lithuania in general. Brisk in particular. And this is why the Rav, and you know, when Reb Heschel said, it's not that the little details didn't bother him, Chas v'chalila, but I know what the Rav held. And Heschel says that, and the Rav held, push it, the Rav held from Chaim, that when it comes to Sefer Torah, the letter has to look like the letter. And all the machloket in the world is only lachatchila. To the Yevit, if it looks like an Aleph Bet, Gimel Dalet, according to Beit Joseph, it's good enough. You don't have to be up to all this shita. You understand what I'm saying? Lachatchila. You try. But the Yevit, it looks like the letter. That's what counts, and you're Yotzeh with the Beit Yosef, even though you're in Ashkenaz, even though your name is Rakefet or Rothkoff, and it's not the Sutton or Dishon. Understand? You're Yotzeh with the letters. That's what the Peshul meant, I'm sure. But the way he said it, that the Rav didn't like little details, he was bothered, he didn't want to be bothered, but no, of course the Rav. He was in Rav Ovadia. And this poor kid arguing with the Rav, he wants to be Yotzei Alishit, and the Rav, you don't have to, I don't understand you, I don't know what you mean, it's a pashut. The kid was a little kid. At my age, I know what Rebbe is saying to me. Rebbe is saying to me, it's not within my gang, it's not within my method. We're brisker. This is it. It's good enough. It's kasher. This is the way I hold. Meikra din. No problem. All right. The guy made a mistake, but it doesn't pass the tefillin. This poor kid growing up in America 20 years ago when the Funkite binge was on felt very bad that he's putting on tefillin where there's a problem according to certain achrayim, and if they could be ktav al gabi ktav and shichu al gabi shichu, maybe he could solve the problem by redoing it, lishmar, etc. You understand me, Barry? But this is the question. Okay, gentlemen. Shlomo, any question? I saw your hand up. Okay, gentlemen, I want to reiterate very quickly. First of all, I want to remind you, Tuesday's class. I wouldn't miss Tuesday for all the shekel by which the stock market increased today. And that's billions of shekel involved. And even though a shekel may be worthless when there are a billion involved, even shekel take on value. Tuesday, the Yisrat Hashem, called Truat Shofa. And the Rav will contradict himself on the beautiful words we said last week, but in Dashanut, that's his privilege. But what material, what insight, what a man, what a mind. Although, I'm not saying he's right. Vis-a-vis Rebbe Vagilov.